They called me a visionary, said I rose too fast, spoke too well, moved too precisely. But what no one knew was that every step I took was choreographed by someone else. A man who never asked for credit because he already owned the blueprint. He shaped my voice, my image, even my ambition. They saw success. I was living a simulation. This isn't a story about business. This is a story about control, about the power of psychological manipulation, offshore puppeteering, and the dangerous line between mentor and master. I let him in. He rewired everything. But now, I'm rewriting the ending. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. The illusion of control. Success always looked clean on the outside. Like a photo op on the cover of Forbes, tailored blazer, confident smile, minimalist office with a view of the skyline. It was all curated, polished, broadcasted for applause. But the truth? My success was never really mine. It was orchestrated, engineered, controlled, and the man who controlled it? He didn't ask for credit. That wasn't his style. No, true manipulators don't crave the spotlight, they design it. I first saw him at a private art exploration event in Tribeca. It was one of those nights that made you feel like you were stepping into a secret society. High ceilings, abstract light installations, and intellectuals sipping wine while dissecting color theory and behavioral economics. I was out of my element, but trying to network, trying to build the version of myself I thought I needed to be. Then he took the stage. He didn't introduce himself. He didn't need to. He walked up, dressed in slate gray from head to toe, and started talking like he was dropping sacred scripture. But the topic was ethical marketing and social manipulation. How to shape perceptions. How to sell ideas by triggering market emotions. How confusion, when weaponized correctly, could actually convert skeptics into loyalists. I stood there frozen. It was as if he reached into my spine and adjusted the way I processed the world. After the talk, he found me, not the other way around. "You don't belong here," he said with a smile. "But that's exactly why you're perfect." He introduced himself simply as Elias. No last name, no credentials. Just that knowing look in his eyes like he already knew how my story would end. Within days, he had slid into my inbox with reading lists on cognitive psychology, persuasion methods, cognitive techniques, and obscure links to server room psychology experiments used in early Silicon Valley leadership tests. He told me I had raw talent, that my instinct for human emotions was potent but unrefined, that with the right shaping, I could become lethal. Not just successful, unstoppable. I was skeptical at first, but he dismantled my walls with precision. Every conversation felt like surgery. He'd ask the kind of questions that left you breathless, exposed. He mirrored my speech, tracked my eye movements, praised my flaws like they were assets he could monetize. He started small. Tips on posture, voice modulation, how to exploit body intelligence and use pauses in speech to evoke discomfort in competitors. Then he introduced dark psychology, just drops at a time. How true leadership wasn't about inspiration, but perceived inevitability. That the best way to control a room was to never let them realize they were being led. I was seduced, intellectually, emotionally. Not sexually, not yet. This was deeper, more invasive, a kind of mental intimacy I didn't know existed. It made everything else feel shallow. Under his guidance, I began rising fast. I crafted a story that investors loved, orphan-turned-CEO, vision-driven, no-nonsense. Elias rewrote my press releases, rewired my bio, even refined my vocal tone for high-trust environments. Suddenly I was invited to conferences, panels, elite pitch tables. My company raised $40 million in 6 months. And that's when he said it. "I'll need access to your offshore accounts." I laughed. I thought he was joking. He wasn't. "You're getting attention," he said calmly. "And attention invites weakness. Parasites. I can handle the mitigation if you give me access." My gut twisted, but his logic was always perfect. Impeccable. Bulletproof. He told me about shadowed secrets in high-growth startups. How companies were devoured from the inside by their own legal teams. How founders were manipulated through lovers, lawsuits, and whisper campaigns. He laid out a whole world behind the world. He said he could protect me from all of it. He had become so embedded in my routines, my instincts, that the idea of saying no felt dangerous. Not because he'd retaliate, but because I truly believed I couldn't move without him. So I did it. I gave him access. He didn't smile. He didn't gloat. He simply nodded and said, Now we're fully aligned. That night, I lay awake, my mind racing like never before. I started replaying every moment since we met, every comment he made, every decision I thought I made. Were any of them mine? Or had I just been a proxy all along? I got up, went to my laptop, and opened my inbox. My assistant, someone I'd worked with for years, had sent me a message 2 hours earlier. I'm leaving. No notice. I can't watch this anymore. Check what he's hiding in your calendar. Password truth. Attached was a photo. Me and Elias, but not one I remembered taking. We were standing in front of a two-way mirror. My face was lit up in awe. His wasn't facing the camera, but on the glass beside us in what looked like lipstick, someone had written, "You're not the only one he's building." I stared at it for what felt like hours. My hand was shaking. This wasn't mentorship. This was a controlled experiment, and I was one of the variables. Mind racing in a designer cage. I didn't sleep that night. I didn't even lie down. I sat in the dark, cross-legged on the floor of my penthouse, trying to convince myself that the picture didn't mean what I knew it meant. That the message wasn't real. That Elias wasn't orchestrating something far beyond what I could see. But every breath I took felt heavier. My mind kept returning to that phrase, "You're not the only one he's building." Suddenly, everything looked different. My office wasn't mine. It was a designer cage built to keep me satisfied while he calibrated my every move. The color palette, the lighting, even the art on my walls. All chosen by Elias through casual suggestions that I took as stylish recommendations. My team? Recruited with his subtle input. My daily calendar? Synced with his server. He didn't just teach me persuasion methods. He tested them on me. I opened my calendar using the password my assistant left. Truth. At first, nothing looked out of place. Meetings, keynotes, strategy syncs. But then I scrolled to the bottom, to the events marked as ghost entries. Invisible to everyone but him. There were blocked windows labeled with only numbers. IP addresses, maybe. And then one entry that chilled me to the core. Body intelligence session, 4 a.m., remote feed active. It was set for that night. I clicked on it. The attachment was a video, grainy surveillance footage from an old corporate training session, but there I was, sitting in a chair, electrodes attached to my scalp. Elias stood beside me, coaching me on how to feel emotions without displaying them, guiding my breathing, altering my posture. I had no memory of it. I don't remember ever consenting to it. And yet, I looked so willing, so eager. My smile was terrifying. That's when the nausea hit. He hadn't just manipulated me through language. He had reprogrammed me through literal body language conditioning, tied behavioral psychology to audio manipulation, syncing suggestions to sound frequencies. I was the walking result of engineering stories rewritten over time. I slammed my laptop shut and screamed, loud primal, but swallowed by the acoustics of a penthouse too clean to echo. By sunrise, I made a decision. I was going to confront him, but Elias never reacted to pressure. That was part of his brilliance. He didn't hide behind power. He became invisible inside it. When I walked into our downtown co-working suite, the one that housed both our companies under one discrete umbrella, everything was normal. Too normal. My employees were laughing over lattes. Elias's team was sitting in glass rooms, pretending to analyze market dynamics. But there was something off in the air, like the energy in a room just after lightning strikes. I pushed through and found him alone, standing over a touchscreen monitor displaying what looked like a network of avatars, names, and colored threads. A mind map. At the center, my face. I froze. "Ah," he said without turning around. "You saw the video." He didn't look surprised. He didn't even bother to explain. Instead, he tapped the screen, zooming in on a node labeled Cognitive Pivot Point, November 14th, 22. "You don't remember that date, do you?" he said. "But it's the night you stopped being reactive and became strategic. I helped you rewire." My mouth opened, but nothing came out. "You gave me permission, technically. You don't remember it because I used NLP techniques to frame the session as a breakthrough," he continued. "You wanted more. You begged for precision. You were my best subject." He said it like I was an algorithm, a product. And maybe I was. "You crossed a line," I finally whispered. "This is abuse." Elias turned slowly to face me. "No, this is complex emotion refinement. This is evolution." I left. I don't remember walking out, or how I ended up in my car, or how long I sat staring at the skyline like it could answer the questions chewing holes in my mind. For the next few days, I spiraled. I questioned every move, every success, every memory. Was the speech I gave in Geneva mine? Or did he manipulate the pacing through my earpiece? Was the sudden stock spike a coincidence? Or the result of his manipulation of market psychology? I wanted to escape him. I needed to. So I ran. I bought a last-minute ticket to Iceland, a remote art retreat known for its isolation and vow of digital silence. No phones, no Wi-Fi, just snow, silence, and space to breathe. The cold bit into my skin like a necessary punishment, but he still found me. On the second day, a drone buzzed overhead. Small, silent, surgical. It dropped a package. Inside was a note, written in Elias's elegant, perfect script. You can run from the lie, but not from the system that built you. You are what I made, and every attempt to reclaim yourself is still a shadow of my design. That night, I stared into the mirror and didn't recognize myself. This wasn't mentorship. This wasn't empowerment. This was possession. And it was time to decide. Would I keep dancing like his perfect puppet? Or finally become the con artist he never saw coming? Secrets in the server room. There's a kind of silence that doesn't soothe. It stings. Iceland had offered me that silence, the frozen kind that seeps into your marrow. But even there, even in exile, I couldn't escape him. Elias wasn't a man anymore. He was an infection, a code embedded deep inside my habits, my voice, my success. I left the retreat early. I had made my decision. I was done playing his perfect creation. I was going to burn the lab that built me. Back in New York, I used the digital trail my assistant had hinted at, those ghost entries, the strange server logs, the encrypted timestamps. I reached out to one person, Run, a quiet cybersecurity expert Elias had once dismissed as too ethical to be useful. That made her the perfect ally. Ren agreed to meet in a nondescript co-working loft in Brooklyn. No cameras, burner phones only. I laid out everything. The shadowed secrets, the neurological conditioning, the manipulations hidden under the guise of ethical leadership. She listened without blinking. Then she slid a USB stick across the table. "This opens what you're looking for," she said. "But once you go in, you can't unknow it." The data led me to a location I should have guessed long ago. A hidden server room Elias maintained inside an old Arts Foundation building. It was disguised as a basement gallery storage vault, but what it housed was no gallery. It was a temple, a shrine to control. There were walls of humming drives, and every screen flickered with data profiles, faces, voice spectrums, reaction analytics. But at the center of the room was something more terrifying than anything I'd imagined. A live model of my brain. No, not literally, but emotionally. A dashboard built from years of tracked behavior, voice inflections, biometric data, emotional responses logged by facial movement AI. A profile titled simply, Subject, Siren 9 Status, Active. True body intelligence patterning complete. Mind sync level, 94%. Emotional override, enabled. I stepped back, trembling. He had used me not just to manipulate others, but as a prototype. A beta version of a psychological OS. He was engineering human dynamics, creating a blueprint of behavioral psychology that could be applied, sold, scaled. The tools labeled on the screen chilled me further. Cognitive skill index. Emotion mitigation techniques. Dark psychology layer toggle. Audio manipulation sync testing. Market emotion surge predictive model. And then, the names. Dozens of them. Other women. Other men. Some I recognized, influencers, CEOs, actors. All connected to nodes on a sprawling map. Some marked complete. Others failed. Then my name flashing. Active threat, elevated. He knew. I heard a noise. A soft buzz. A feed activating. And then his voice, smooth, calm, terrifying. I knew you'd come here eventually. Curiosity is your weakness. Just like ambition. I designed you to question, but not to disobey. I froze. You're not the enemy, you know. You're the future. You're the PS1 of persuasion engineering. Outdated now, but revolutionary once. And still, so beautifully mine. My hands shook as I yanked the cables from the wall, sparks flying, the room groaning under the weight of disconnection. I didn't stop until every screen went black. But it didn't matter. Because before the final shutdown, one last notification appeared. Backup complete. Transfer to Cloud Node C, success. Even now, he was 10 steps ahead. I staggered out into the street like a ghost, the city too bright, too loud, too alive. My ears rang with his voice, but worse, my mind echoed with his patterns. I started to wonder, had he really vanished from my life? Or had I just become so synced with him that I'd lost the ability to tell? I needed leverage. something Elias couldn't anticipate, a tactic outside his playbook. So I did what he would never expect. I reached out to another woman I found on the list, a name I'd seen and dismissed before. But now she might be the key. A victim? Maybe. But like me, she might also be a survivor of society manipulation. And together, we might have the power to turn the game around. Sex, ski slopes, and shadowed truths. Elias always told me that skiing was a metaphor for power. That real control wasn't about standing still, but learning how to fall without breaking. Speed. Balance. Calculated surrender. He whispered once as we stood at the edge of an ice blue slope in the Swiss Alps. That's what separates leaders from those who get buried under avalanches. It was our last official mentorship retreat, but it felt more like a test, or maybe a seduction cloaked in strategy. He chartered the entire lodge for just us. Said I needed isolation to rediscover myself. But what unfolded over those 3 days wasn't rejuvenation. It was ritual. Every meal, every word, every glance became loaded. He laced philosophical discussions with sexual tension and market metaphors. We'd eat at a long pine table, snow falling just beyond the window, and he'd ask things like, "What do you feel when I say false innocence?" Or, "How does market psychology differ from complex emotions in a sexual power dynamic?" At night, he made me drink something herbal. "Just grounding," he said. But my mind would melt into slow, spiraling dream states where his voice looped phrases like, "You are made for command," and "Desire is just energy waiting for direction." The next morning, I'd wake up in bed alone, naked, disoriented. I told myself nothing happened, but my body told a different story. The way I moved, the tension in my hips, the bruises, the restraint burns. Still, I stayed. Why? Because by then, my body intelligence wasn't mine anymore. He had trained it, broken it down like a machine, calibrated it with dark psychology, and then reassembled it into something that responded more to his touch than my own thoughts. On the second day, he made me ski without poles. "Just balance and breath. Let the slope take you," he said. "Lean in. The moment you fight the hill, you lose." Halfway down, I fell hard, slicing my thigh on a jagged patch of ice. I screamed. He appeared out of nowhere, scooped me up, dragged me into the lodge. But instead of medical care, he whispered, "Pain opens doors talking never could. Now you're soft enough to be rewritten." That night, he laid me on a bed of furs, whispered a mix of ancient languages and NLP techniques, and made love to me like I was an equation, not a woman. I remember looking up and seeing a mirror on the ceiling. I didn't recognize the woman staring back. He was studying me in that moment, calculating my emotional response, watching for shifts. He called it data-driven intimacy. I called it spiritual annihilation. By the final day, I was done pretending this was mentorship. I was his experiment, a living manual on social manipulation, sex as psychological leverage, and human emotion engineering. I decided I would escape the moment we landed back in New York. But he had one last move. As the jet touched down, he handed me a document, a contract cloaked in meaningless legal jargon. Buried on page 14 was a clause. All neural data collected in experimental leadership trials belongs solely to the architect. He had labeled himself the architect. And my body, my voice, my career, everything was his property in the eyes of that contract. I was shaking with rage. I ripped the document in half. He didn't flinch. He leaned in close, his voice ice and velvet all at once. "You don't need to sign it. You already did. Every time you said yes to me. Every time you followed my scripts, every time you let me inside your body, you made me your architect." Then he kissed my forehead like I was something holy. That night, I found myself back in my penthouse, but it no longer felt like home. It felt like a controlled environment. A lab. I stared at the city lights and made a choice. No more running. No more hiding behind victimhood. I was going to become worse than him. Not out of vengeance, but strategy. If he made me a prototype, then I would become the upgrade. The next version. And I would burn his legacy from the inside out. But first, I needed help. I picked up the phone and called her, the woman from the node chart. And when she answered, her first words were, "I've been waiting for you. The art of revenge." Her name was Leora. On Elias's chart, she was listed as node, L6 emotional drift, anomalous. That one word, anomalous, was why I called her. Because if someone had broken the pattern, even briefly, I needed to know how. We met in a parking garage at midnight. No names. No greetings. Just eye contact and a shared storm in our silence. She passed me a drive. No casing. No label. This has the blueprint. Every subject. Every test, every manipulation model he's deployed, he thinks I don't exist anymore. Let's keep it that way. Her voice didn't tremble. Mine did when I said, why help me? Because I was his favorite, until you replaced me. The air froze. Revenge isn't always loud. Sometimes it's strategic. Surgical. What came next wasn't a meltdown, it was a rebuild. A calculated uprising from the inside out. I took everything Elias taught me, all the persuasion methods, the behavioral psychology, the group behavior tactics, even the exam techniques he used to implant commands, and I weaponized them. I started reappearing on panels, speaking engagements, my voice refined with cognitive skills laced in. People noticed. But this time, I wasn't speaking his language. I was speaking mine. And behind the scenes, I was destroying his systems one by one. It began with the offshore accounts. I'd left them in his hands. That was my mistake. But thanks to Leora, I gained access again. I drained one. Not completely. Just enough to trigger an internal audit from one of his shell firms in Dubai. While his team scrambled, I released manipulated financial reports tied to ethical marketing violations across three continents. The dominoes started to fall. His clients, influencers, CEOs, politicians, began receiving anonymous tips, each carefully timed with market dynamics reports and cognitive technique breakdowns that showed just how deeply Elias had been puppeteering them. I hit his server room backups next. Using Ren's encryption kill codes, we shut down three nodes. Each time, I left a digital signature burned into the code. This is for the ones you broke. But the final strike wasn't data. It was image. I leaked a full presentation, one Elias once gave in a private gathering of tech elites. It was a masterclass in dark psychology. He called it the art of controlled collapse. The video showed him outlining how to build a public figure from scratch, seed social unrest through audio manipulation, and rewrite ethical standards with charm and silence. The media exploded. He went dark. No tweets. No press. No appearances. Just gone. I waited for the retaliation. I stayed in hotels under false names. I moved my money through Celestial Insights-backed crypto networks. I encrypted my devices with true body intelligence neural locks. Tech so new, it hadn't even hit MIT's ethics review. I thought I'd won, until I received the package. No return label, just a small white box. Inside, a photo of me, standing in front of an elevator taken that morning. And a note, you're getting sloppy. Emotion breeds exposure. Let's not forget who trained you in market emotions. I dropped the photo and scanned the walls like they were closing in. He wasn't dead. He wasn't done. But neither was I. I launched a new operation, public-facing, global untouchable. I called it The Skillful Art of Manipulation. A podcast. A platform. A weapon. I filled it with episodes on ethical leadership, positive influence, cognitive psychology, and dark forces disguised as mentors. People thought it was self-help. But it was really a map of Elias's methods exposed in full light, turned against him. And if he wanted to take me down for that, he'd have to destroy the very image he built. I had become both mirror and fire. But there was one thing still missing, a final reckoning. Because even now, with his empire crumbling, I could feel him breathing through the cracks. And I knew exactly where he would be next. Not in a city, not in a bunker, but in the one place no one would think to look. My past. Shadows of justice. I always thought justice came with headlines, mugshots, trials, confessions. But real justice? It's quieter. Slower. Sometimes it never comes from the outside at all. Sometimes you have to give it to yourself. After everything, the server room, the sex rituals, the offshore empire I dismantled, I still couldn't sleep. Not because I feared Elias was out there, but because I feared he was still inside me. I kept hearing his voice. You were never real until I shaped you. Even now, I wasn't sure where he ended and I began. So I went back. Not to the Alps. Not to the boardrooms. But to the place he'd never think to look. Where I buried who I was long before I ever met him. Home. A rusting childhood house on the outskirts of Queens, boarded windows, a cracked sidewalk stained by time. I hadn't been there in 15 years. It felt foreign. Or maybe I did. Inside, the floorboards creaked like memory. Dust-covered photo frames sat crooked on the walls. And in the back room, my old bedroom, I found something that broke me more than Elias ever did. A journal. One I kept before ambition swallowed me. I flipped through it, expecting cliché. What I found was worse. I had written at 16. If someone told me what to say, how to sit, how to dress, maybe I'd finally be taken seriously. I had primed myself long before Elias. That's the truth people hate to face. The manipulator doesn't always enter through the front door. Sometimes they just fill the void you already dug for them. I wept there for hours. For the girl I was. For the woman I became. For the parts of me I sold off under the disguise of self-improvement. That's when I made peace with the one truth Elias never controlled. I let him in, but I also let him go. And now, I needed to finish the story, not by deleting him, but by making him irrelevant. I returned to the city one last time, not as his puppet, not as his product, but as the one thing he never mastered. A voice he couldn't rewrite. I walked into a podcast studio. The final episode of The Skillful Art of Manipulation queued up. This time there was no mask. No filter. No script. Just me. Raw. Honest. Dangerous in the way only truth can be. I leaned into the mic. This is for anyone who ever believed their success meant safety. For anyone seduced by brilliance, blinded by mentorship, consumed by charm wrapped in psychological warfare. Let this be your line in the sand. And I told everything. Not like a survivor, but like a weapon of awareness. I exposed the engineering stories he buried behind performance metrics, the cognitive techniques he tied to trust, the tools and tactics he disguised as love. I explained how he used social dynamics, exam techniques, and even celestial insights to pull strings no one else saw. Then I ended the episode with one final message. You don't beat the system by pretending you were never part of it. You beat it by knowing every tactic it used and refusing to pass them on. The podcast went viral. Thousands of emails poured in. Stories. Survivors. Ex-operatives. Whistleblowers. It didn't matter if Elias responded, because the world had already started to decode the pattern. He didn't need to be exposed. He needed to be understood and defanged. Months passed. I traveled. I wrote. I walked through cities without bodyguards, without fear. And then, one morning, I received a final message. No sender. No subject. Just a video clip. Elias. Alone in a warehouse. Speaking to the camera. His face looked older, tired, almost human. Congratulations. You broke my machine. But here's the real question. What will you build now without me guiding your hands? Then the screen went black. I smiled. For the first time in years, I didn't feel panic. I felt peace. Because now I knew. He was never the architect. I was. And I always had been.